Good morning from HPR2. It's The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook. And as ocean temperatures peak over the weekend, a series of events throughout the islands will call public attention to unprecedented bleaching and potential dying of our coral reefs. We'll look ahead to Bleachapalooza. And Lieutenant Governor Shan Tsutsui wants the state to reconsider its choice of provider for its Maui hospitals. He'll be with us to tell us why.
And I'm Kathy Kozak. Hear the unique style of local singer-songwriter Mr. Mac as he shares his music live in the studio. And do you like to sketch? Amateurs, professionals, and first-timers alike are invited to an urban sketchathon this weekend with Sebastian Sievert and the Urban Sketchers on Oahu.
It's Thursday, October 1st. Those conversations and a few more, but next, the news. Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook, and I'm here with Kathy Kozak, sitting in for Beth Ann for the next couple of weeks.
Well, it's happy to be here, learn something new, hear about the environment, get a little depressed about it, hoping we can do something to change what we're doing here in the islands.
We're going to cheer you up, Kathy, I promise.
All right, I'll hold on.
Well, the warming of our oceans is everyone's problem, whether we know it or not, and warmer ocean temperatures lead to the bleaching and possible dying of coral reefs. When they die, an entire ecosystem is thrown out of balance. The State Department of Land and Natural Resources wants people to understand the extent of the problem and take part in an island-wide effort to identify and locate bleached corals. This Saturday, the DLNR will deploy volunteers from all islands in the first ever Bleachapalooza. Ann Rosinski is a marine resource specialist at the Division of Aquatic Resources, and she's here to tell us more. Good morning, Ann. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Bleaching, when you see it, is very obviously you know why it's called that. The reef turns white. What has happened to it?
Yeah, so this year we've had unprecedented levels of coral bleaching throughout the state. And bleaching is a process where when the corals are stressed, and in this case, because of the high ocean temperatures that we've been having, they actually expel algae that lives in their tissue. This algae gives them most of their energy and a lot of their color. And so they'll appear white, even though the animal is still alive, it's still there. It's very striking and very shocking when you see a pure white coral.
And it's on its way to dying completely, right? Because it now has fewer protections.
Right. So once it's bleached, it's a lot more vulnerable to things like disease and other stressors. And if the high temperatures stick around for a while, if we have these high temperatures for a while, then they will eventually die.
What we've been hearing is that those high temperatures are coming back more than we've ever seen them. Is that accurate?
Right. So, we had a mild coral bleaching event last year, which was unanticipated. This year, because we've had a very strong El Nino, scientists and researchers have been predicting this thermal stress to come for quite a while. So it was predicted to happen. We were looking out for it. And unfortunately, it looks like all the predictions were pretty much on par. And now we're the majority of ocean waters around Hawaii are in alert level 2 for coral bleaching, which is the highest of the levels through the NOAA Coral Reef Watch program. And it's where we're going to expect to see coral mortality. So we're quite concerned about it.
When you find coral bleaching, you can at least mitigate the effects of further stressors on it, right?
Right.
Is that mainly the reason, the rationale for finding and locating bleaching events?
Right. So, yeah, we want to find the hot spots of this coral bleaching event. We want to find those locations that are being affected the most by it. And that will give the DLNR a chance to focus their management actions on the worst affected places. Unfortunately, with coral bleaching, we do have a limited toolkit in terms of, there's very few things we can do at this point to stop the bleaching effects that are going on. But what we can do is focus on helping the corals recover from this event through our management strategies and a lot as well through individual actions.
I would think that when people ask what can we do, the first thing you can tell them is stay away from the reef when you see a bleaching event, right? Don't add to the stressors on the organism.
Right. I mean, we definitely want to be extra cautious around corals during this time. They really are vulnerable. And so any added stress, whether it's being, you know, trampled on, or if there's, you know, boat strikes or pollution that comes into the ocean, all of those things could ultimately kill the corals while they're in this stress state.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we are encouraging people to get in the water, especially through this event, Bleachapalooza, and
yeah.
see the bleaching for themselves, and as well as reporting it through the eyes of the reef network. But, you know, in that process, we also really stress that it's important to be extra cautious around corals at this time.
Is there, and you are going to be training people who are going in the water on Saturday to find and locate bleaching events. You're going to be training them in how to do that. Is there still time for people to get that training? We've got another day before Saturday.
Right. So, yeah, Bleachapalooza is coming up on Saturday. And so we're partnering with the Eyes of the Reef Network, mm-hmm. and they do periodically offer free training on how to identify things like coral bleaching, as well as coral diseases and aquatic invasive species. So over the past week, they've had a series of trainings. But if you haven't been trained in it, it's not too late. They have a lot of information on their website, Eyes mm-hmm. of the Reef website, and also on Facebook, that shows you what coral, what bleached coral looks like next to a normal coral. And I mean, I guess fortunately with coral bleaching, it's quite obvious when the coral is bleached. It's pure
yeah.
white when, you know, you're used to seeing browns and grays and purples out there on the reef. So
yeah.
this is one of those events where just about anyone can partake in it. You know, if you're a confident snorkeler, diver, spear fisherman, if you're out there on the reef all the time anyways, this is a great chance to take a part in something. If you see coral bleaching, report it to us.
Sounds as if it's you still have plenty of room for volunteers, but it also sounds as if they should be at least a kind of an intermediate swimmer.
Yeah,
level.
Definitely. Yeah, so we're looking for ocean users to take part in this event, and we're really excited about this. Is the first event of its kind where it's a statewide call to action on this one day, and the significance of October 3rd, it's actually the predicted peak of this thermal stress that we've been having. So it's kind of an all hands on deck moment where ocean users can get out there and, you know, and be part of helping us all learn more about this event and how it's affecting our reefs.
The thermal stress that we're seeing that you just described, is it as strong as it has ever been?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot stronger than the thermal stress we were seeing last year. Hawaii has only had one other mass coral bleaching event, and so this is the second one, and it's definitely the most impactful.
So that gives you some perspective on just how intense a problem this is. Yeah,
and you know, we're not alone. Globally, there's been substantial coral bleaching this year. The scientists are terming it GB3, or Global Bleaching 3. It's only the third time in the world's, you know, recorded history that they've seen mass bleaching on this scale. So, you know, unfortunately, we're included in that event this time. But I think it also offers us a chance to join, you know, a global conversation about the effects that we're seeing.
Just being aware would seem to be at least a step in the right direction, yeah?
Yeah, I think, you know, at this point, it's important for people to recognize what coral bleaching is and what's causing it, and just appreciate, you know, how much it really is having an impact on our reefs.
Well, it sounds as if, and no way to really tell what next year is going to bring.
Right. So, yeah, it is predicted that thermal stress, because of this El Nino, will have lasting effects and into the next year as well. And it's also unknown, you know, the effect that this bleaching could have on different coral processes like reproduction and feeding into the future. So we'll definitely be, you know, looking at this for quite a while.
Well, we'll need to. Thanks very much, Ann.
Thank you.
Ann Rosinski is a marine resource specialist at the Division of Aquatic Resources. She's been helping coordinate the effort to respond to this year's unprecedented coral bleaching across the state. On Saturday, when ocean temperatures are predicted to peak, volunteers will simultaneously get into the ocean on Maui, Oahu, Kauai, and Hawaii Island to look for bleaching on the reef. The Eyes of the Reef Network is offering bleaching identification training on its website, and you can find out more on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page. This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2. It's 8:14, and later in the show, music from Mr. Mack, live in our studio. But first, your quiz.
In today's backyard quiz, we're thinking about a small town in Hawaii that's a popular destination for visitors and locals alike. It's a town with a population of about 10,000 at the base of a mountain, a popular local landmark known as Sleeping Giant. It's rich with visitor attractions like hotels, shopping centers and restaurants, and a popular shopping village which has a lot of small keepsake shops. The town has its own charms, but you might come here to use it as a springboard for access to the beach at Lydgate State Park or hiking on the Sleeping Giant Trail. It's described this way in a Forbes magazine listing of America's prettiest towns. Quote, it's a very Hawaiian town with traditional ukulele makers and fish taco trucks parked under the palm trees. We're looking for its name, which in Hawaiian means solid. We'll be back with it in a half hour. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. And be the first one to get it right, and we'll mail you a T-shirt.
Hi, good morning. I'm Brian Lee Sackett from Hawaii Repertory Theater. You're listening to The Conversation on HPR, Hawaii Public Radio. Join the conversation on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation.
Dan McLaughlin is a local singer-songwriter with the moniker Mr. Mack. He's been writing songs for much of his life and recently completed his first CD entitled Shadowbox. He's incorporated fellow local musicians in his music, including a violin, electric cello, keyboards, bass, and more. He's in the studio to share what inspires him to create songs and lyrics and share a little bit of his latest work live. Good morning, Dan. Welcome to The Conversation.
Good morning, Kathy. Thank you for having me.
Now, tell me a little bit about what inspires Mr. Mack here to write a song and to go out there and perform it for everybody else to hear.
Well, I guess my album Shadowbox is a collection of songs that I've written over the years. I never really had a chance to go out with my own band. It just always got sidetracked. And so this is a chance for me to, it's just a kind of a collection of songs that I've written. And what inspires me, I guess, is I grew up in a pretty musical household. Both my brothers played music. One played piano, and the other was a guitar player. And he would never let me touch his guitar, and I always wanted to play that guitar. And so once I got my hands on one, I just I play it whenever I get a chance.
Now, sometimes when we talk with songwriters, they say the music comes first, the lyrics later. Other folks, the lyrics first, the music later. How does that process work for you?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that's one of those things that it's a mixed bag for any songwriter. So for me, it could be a little part of a lyric might come, a little piece of a phrase that sounds interesting, something in your life that pops up. And then again, it could also be a riff that you're working on, some kind of a musical interlude that you just keep playing and playing until words just start to attach themselves to it. Or it could be a combination of both those elements.
So when you decided to go ahead and produce your album, Shadowbox, how did you know who to incorporate with this? You have quite an eclectic sound with some folks who joined you on this particular venture.
Yeah, I think it depended because it's a very eclectic album. It goes from rock to very soft folk to there's a little country, there's a little blues. And so all these people kind of just arrived in my life. They just happened to be there. They're all great musicians, and I just happened to, say, hey, would you like to help me out on an album? I had a great somebody that I worked with at school. This fellow, Dan Cutter, plays drums, and another school teacher, Matt Miller, played bass. And we got together, kind of formulated a unit, and then around them came a schoolhood friend, Joe Lohmeyer, on cello. And from that, Diane Rubio, also on cello. And then an old family friend, Lisa Gomes, just happened to be hovering in the background. And I had a great harmonica player, Louis the Fish Danolfo, who just showed up at a gig one time and played along with my songs. So they all just kind of happened organically. The fellow in the lead-in, Nick Gertsen, comes all the way from Sweden. And he's a really elegant heavy metal guitar player.
So there's a whole bunch of folks who really collaborated together to help bring this album to fruition. Now, you wanted to play a little bit for us today. We've got a few minutes. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to play and set it up for us.
Well, I like to, whenever I'm not in the mood to really play my music, I like to go into an alternative tuning, and sometimes a song just pops up out of there. And this song is on the album. It's called Call Me Over. Call our contact incidental, call me over sentimental, but call me sometime. Call me crazy, call me mental, call me rough or call me gentle, but call me sometime. Call my feedback too staccato, call me incommunicado, but call me sometime. Call me the worst case scenario, a cloud that follows wherever you go, call me sometime. You know I really wanna stay with you, but we got things that we have got to work through. Stop listing the impossibilities and let's utilize our capabilities to change our world. To change our world.
Ah, oh, what a beautiful sound live here in the studio. Now, you're going to be playing out in a couple of places up and coming. Tell us about that.
That's right. I'll be in the Acoustic Battle of the Bands at the Republic Cafe this coming Wednesday at 8 o'clock. Each band gets 20 minutes, and it's supposed to be an acoustic set. I'll also be at Rock the Rock at the On Stage in Kapahulu on the 16th of October. That's a Friday night, and we'll be playing with a bunch of bands as well.
So throw out there a wish. If you had a chance to project where you want your music career to go, where would you want to be?
Well, I would at least, my biggest wish would be that I could at least get popular in Europe, so then I could go on tour in Europe. And, you know, hang out in all kinds of cool places. And then after I've made all my money, I can invite my wife over to Europe. And then we'll just hang out there for a couple of months.
All right. Well, that sounds pretty good. I'll take you up on that anytime. Okay. Well, Shadowbox is the title of Mr. Mack's new CD. It's available on iTunes, Reverb Nation, and through his Facebook page, which is linked to ours at Hawaii Conversation.
Can I quickly mention also MrMack808.com. That's my website. You can contact me through that, and you can also sample the songs.
All right, and we'll link that to our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page, or you can find it on hpr2.org. Thanks for coming in.
Long talk. Been a long time since we took our Sunday walk. Going to see the movies, just you and me. There's a matinee playing at 2:45.
This is Jason Taglianetti, inviting you to join me for a new season of Applause in a Small Room. This week, Streetlight Cadence gives us a history of the band, from their humble beginnings as street buskers to a U.S. tour and performing internationally. Join me as we present Streetlight Cadence on the next Applause in a Small Room, Sunday at 4 p.m. on HPR2.
When it comes to HPR's pledge drives, it's not a matter of if we reach our goal, it's when. More contributions received now means less to be raised on the air later. Mahalo to Carol Lee Arnold of Honolulu, Tim Hansen of Hilo, and Barry Leitner of Honolulu. Thank you for your early gifts. Let's make good time on the fall drive. Become a first-time giver at the $10 a month sustaining member level. Call 955-8821 during business hours, or you can give online at hawaiipublicradio.org. We can expect lively debate when delegates gather next spring to establish a framework for Native Hawaiian self-determination. 40 delegates will be elected statewide in November from a slate of 209 candidates, and it's a collection of people and points of view that is nothing if not diverse. Chad Blair has a reality check from Civil Beat. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning, Chris.
I think the reason we can expect lively debate is because of the people who are going to be taking part in it, yeah?
You know, some of these folks arguably are household names. Anybody that pays attention to the news here in Hawaii will recognize these names. Walter Riddy, Rowena Akana, Bumpy Kanahele, mm-hmm. Dante Carpenter. I'm not going to read them all, but just a few. Faye Hano Hano, Lily Kalak, Le'e Ascari. I butchered that one. Sorry, Lily, if you're listening. Brickwood Galuteria. And here's a name that kind of caught my attention. Teresa Bright, the musician Teresa Bright, is running as well. And to say, to put this mildly, these folks have a lot of different experiences, different backgrounds, and different views on what Hawaiian sovereignty means, the direction for the Native Hawaiian people.
And given that what we're talking about is essentially a kind of a constitutional convention, right?
Right. The Hawaiian word is aha, and it will be held in February through April here on Oahu. And out of this convention, these 40 delegates that are selected will come up with a framework, as you indicated, to decide which way Hawaiians should go. And we don't know what that's going to be. It is up to them. You know, just this week, the Department of Interior announced its goal for a framework on a government-to-government relationship. But it's really up to Native Hawaiians to decide where they want to go. We don't know what that's going to look like, but should be a very interesting outcome. Think about this. This is coming up right during the legislative session and also during an election year. So there will be a lot of interesting activity for sure.
And I could imagine that every issue that you could imagine would be raised at one point or another by one or another of these people, yeah?
I think so. There are people that feel that the kingdom still is intact. There are others that feel that Hawaii should be a sovereign nation. There are others that want a nation within a nation. There are several other models to choose from. Getting folks to agree on one will be challenging. The delegates, by the way, will be voted on through November, and it's only for Native Hawaiians who are qualified, about 95,000 of them, and they'll be able to vote by mail or electronically. If someone is interested in signing up, you still got time. You can read my story up on our website and find out where to go. But the results will be announced December 1st, and it'll be interesting because, you know, there's a lot of people vying for this. 209, but there's only 40 slots. It's also proportional by island. So Oahu, obviously being the largest population-wise, 110 people are going after just 20 seats, delegate seats for this island.
And, you know, if you're concerned that a constitutional convention of this kind might be contentious, you could look no further than the U.S. Constitutional Convention, right?
Yes, exactly. Although that's an interesting model to go from. And just think about how much disagreement there was back there with the founders. I could tell you that groups like the Office of Hawaiian Affairs are welcoming this development. The congressional delegation thinks it's terrific. There are others, however, who are saying, wait a minute, why should we need to go this route? Why should the federal government be involved in this at all? So I think it's an understatement to say that it will be an interesting discussion.
We'll be hearing from them. Thanks a lot, Chad. Chad
Thanks,
Blair
Chris.
Is the political reporter for CivilBeat.com.
Support for The Conversation comes from the College of Business at Hawaii Pacific University, whose MBA Flex Plus program offers a blend of classroom and online classes to fit the lives of working professionals. hpu.edu/business.
Tonight at 5, Town Square, with guest host Neil Milner. Neil, you've got a panel of community activist men, and they want to talk about how to counter domestic violence.
That's right. Good morning, Kathy. This is about the 21st annual Men's March Against Violence, which takes place in Honolulu a week from today at noon. These three men have been not only very much involved with this march for many years, including the co-founder, Salvatore Lancelotti, but the other two men have been very much involved in the field in working in domestic violence, partner violence, and so on. Jarris Hedges is the dean of the med school. He's another panelist. He's a former emergency medicine doctor, so he knows the field pretty well, has some very moving personal stories to tell. And Peter Mattoon is a caseworker at Catholic Charities who works a lot with the homeless, especially through housing the homeless, especially for abuse and violence issues. So those three will be on the panel. We'll be talking about the march, why the march exists, but also the issue of partner and domestic violence generally.
Well, and it's such an important topic, and it's nice to know that there are a group of activist men out there who recognize that this is something important and want to make sure that all people feel secure in any type of relationship.
I think that's right, and I think it'll be a very interesting twist on the panel that they're all men. And in fact, I'm going to talk about why it is a men's march, because it is the men do the marching and encourage everybody to support it. And you're right, that's very much a part of the very strong movement in the last 25 years to combat domestic violence.
How many men come to the march?
Oh, they get pretty many, hundreds, and I think sometimes close to 1,000. It's a pretty successful march. You march from the Capitol to Skygate Park, and then there's a kind of a rally. It's at lunchtime. So it's something that's very handy to do, very convenient if you're working downtown. It's a good way to show your support.
So anybody can join you along the way?
Anybody can join you along the way. It's not a long walk. They can join you along the way. And they do encourage others to come out, certainly women to come out and support the march.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds like a great panel this afternoon.
Oh, I think it's going to be really good.
All right. Thanks, Neil. That's
you're
Town
welcome.
Square with guest host Neil Milner tonight at 5 on HPR2.
Not everyone is happy with the choice of Kaiser Permanente to run state-owned hospital facilities in Maui County. Hawaii Pacific Health, a consortium of local hospitals, was considered the front-runner for the contract and was in on the process long before Kaiser came in. Lieutenant Governor Shan Tsutsui, who served as a state senator from Maui before ascending to the lieutenant governor's job, thinks Hawaii Pacific Health should do the job, and he's on hand to tell us why. Good morning.
Morning, Chris. How are you?
All right, Shan. Good to talk to you.
Great talking to you.
We talked to Avery Chumley, chair of the board that selected Kaiser, a couple of days ago, and he said that, you know, they were two very close contenders for the contract, but that Kaiser won out on a couple of areas. Can you tell us why you disagree with that?
You know, Chris, as you mentioned earlier, you know, I've worked on this for a number of years as a state legislator from Maui, and you know, the main difference is that on Maui we have really only one acute care hospital that services the entire county, and so while this decision that needed to be made based on the financial situation of the state, I'm just a little concerned about, you know, the process in which we've taken so far. And quite frankly, you know, I don't know a whole lot about Kaiser's intentions in Maui. We know that the operation that they run is really different from what HPH runs. I'm not advocating or saying that HPH should have been selected, but, you know, with Kaiser showing interest relatively late in the game, you know, I'm just still concerned about the level of commitment that Kaiser has, as well as, you know, what the true impacts will be for non-Kaiser members as well as non-Kaiser doctors in Maui County.
We were assured, at least when I talked to Avery Chumley, that non-Kaiser members would still have full access. Was that not accurate?
Yeah, you know, I think those are types of information. That kind of information is being sent out to the public now. But I think, you know, it's important that the public has an opportunity to really understand what's being proposed. You know, it would seem to me that if both of the proposals were comparable, from a state standpoint, you want to continue negotiations with both parties until the end. It seems, you know, kind of odd that you would stop negotiations with one, you know, because Kaiser hasn't been selected yet. They've been selected to do negotiations with. And so, you know, it to me, it just seems like the state is not putting itself in the best position to try to negotiate the best deal possible. And again, there's very little that, you know, that I know or that the public knows in terms of what some of those, you know, the different criteria that were used by the selection committee, as well as what those differences in the proposals were.
Do you feel that the selection process was less than transparent?
Well, you know, I do understand why certain parts of it needed to be held confidential. You know, a lot of it had to do with some of the financial and proprietary information that both Kaiser and HPH would have wanted to have disclosed, you know, just to the board members. But, you know, I do think that the public, I mean, this is an important decision that's going to be made, and it's going to affect healthcare delivery of services in Maui County for decades to come. And I just think that, you know, it's important that when you make a decision of this magnitude that the community knows what it's getting. I mean, the community should feel comfortable with the selection. And it's going to be something that's going to be very hard to undo. And so it's not as if HPH was selected that I wouldn't have had some concerns. But again, I think we have an opportunity now to engage the public, and we should do so.
Well, Shan, a couple of minutes ago you said you weren't necessarily saying that Hawaii Pacific Health should get it instead, but it's the only other viable alternative at this point to Kaiser.
You know, at this point, yes. But, you know, I've been told in the past by hospital executives that the concern that Maui Memorial had in finding a partner was that they wanted to find a partner that had a track record of running a community hospital. And so in the past, when they've looked even outside of the state of Hawaii, there have been a number of suitors that have been turned away because they felt for one reason or another that it didn't fit the model. And so, you know, if you look at Kaiser's traditional model, this is, I think, going to be the only community hospital that they run across the country, and so it's really different from what they normally do. And so I'm just curious to find out what it was or what assurances Kaiser had made to the board and to the governor's office that made them feel comfortable with this selection.
Well, Shan, you of course know how long this process has taken already, right? And one concern would have to be that if you throw it open and start actually considering people beyond the two bidders we know about, doesn't that add years to the process?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, there's no question. You know, I think, you know, a majority of us, including myself, would want to get this deal done. I understand the importance of it. You know, the state was going to face another $28 million shortfall for health care services in Maui County.
Yeah.
And so there's no question that we want to do, we believe that a partner is needed. But again, it's making sure that we find the right partner and we negotiate from a position of strength, so that we can continue to improve healthcare and the delivery of services for Maui County.
Let's dial back for a second, Shannon, and just talk about what the problem is, because, as you say, only one acute care facility, Maui Memorial, and the need for a lot of patients in Maui County to be, in serious cases, to be transported to Oahu, right?
Yeah, you know, and that's been the case for a long time. And, of course, you know, people who live in rural areas or on the neighbor islands would obviously prefer to get medical treatment at the home, at the place in which they live. And so that's always been the goal. You know, the goal has been to try to allow for more services to be done closer to where the patients need those medical treatments to happen. And, you know, and I'm hopeful that, you know, if Kaiser is selected, that that is what their intent is, to not just maintain the level of services, but really to increase them over the next several years. And, again, I think it's important and incumbent upon the governor's office, the board, and Kaiser at this point to continue to, you know, provide as much information as they can to the public.
Well, it sounds as if more information would be needed for you to be comfortable at least. But, you know, when you and when I talked to Avery Chumbly the other day, when you talk about, even though you're representing two sides of this discussion, when you talk about what is needed and what the concerns are, it comes out to the same thing. Quality of health care for Maui County, the inequality of access, the acute care, the fact that a lot of people have to then be transported. So you're all working on the same problems, just coming at it from a different, from just different angles is what it sounds like.
Yeah. You know, and obviously, you know, we've put this bill in place to allow for a partnership. And, you know, what I just wouldn't want the state to do is feel like they needed to take the only available potential partner there, and not feel that it could negotiate from a position of strength.
Have you been able to, or would you be, would it be appropriate for you to be in direct contact with Kaiser and get some sort of direct feedback from them about some of these things?
Yeah, I certainly intend to. You know, they've reached out to me, and you know, I've made it very clear that more importantly, I'd like them to reach out to the community. You know, whatever information I think they provide me, they should be willing to provide that to the general public, because, again, it's not about making just me feel comfortable with the situation. It's about really making sure that the residents of Maui County and the visitors who visit there are able to get, you know, good quality health care. And I'm not questioning Kaiser's, you know, the quality of health care services that they provide, but the model is really different, and I just would like to see, you know, how they plan to account for that.
Well, at least there's a lot of motivation to move everyone move in the same direction.
Sure.
So maybe that's a reason for optimism.
Sure, absolutely. And there's no question, I think, that this is the right path for us to go in terms of a partnership. But again, you know, it is not a private deal. This is something that we have a state asset and a state operation that, you know, is currently in place. And as we continue to move forward, I mean, it's going to be incumbent upon the board, the Maui Regional Board, to continue to provide oversight and make sure that whatever terms that are negotiated in this deal are still held in place years to come.
Well, we're going to want to keep in touch about this, Shannon. I thank you very much for taking the time.
No problem. Thanks, Chris, for having me.
You bet. Good to talk to you. Shannon Tsutsui is the state's lieutenant governor and the former senator from Maui's 5th Senatorial District, representing Kahului, Wailuku, Paia, and Lower Paia. In today's Backyard Quiz, we went looking for the name of a town on Kauai with a population of about 10,000 souls. It's nestled at the base of a mountain that's popularly referred to as the Sleeping Giant. It's close to some of the Garden Island's most beautiful beaches and hiking trails, and manages to be a popular site for visitors and without becoming too touristy. Forbes magazine listed this community on Kauai's eastern side as one of the prettiest small towns in America, saying, quote, it's a very Hawaiian town with traditional ukulele makers and fish taco trucks parked under the palm trees. It's a small town with a lot of Hawaiian life, minus the tourist fray. If that sounds familiar to you, that means you figured out that we're talking about Kapa'a.
All right, and it's 8:46. We have a winner, Andrew Johnston from Kalaheo, Kauai. And that's today's quiz. If you've got one, you can send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Achieve 3000's Home Edition, an online tool designed for parents to strengthen the school-home connection by creating continuity between classwork and homework. Achieve3000.com/HawaiiParents.
When was the last time you picked up a pencil, a crayon, along with a blank piece of paper, and just sketched what you saw in front of you? Well, Manoa-born and raised Sebastian Sievert found himself in France meeting up with fellow artists who had created a community who shared a love of sketching. He came home to the islands, looked around, and realized we didn't have the same opportunities here, so he decided to create it and became the co-founder of the Oahu chapter of Urban Sketchers. He's on the line to tell us more about a unique event this weekend, Welcoming All. Good morning, Sebastian.
Hello, Kathy.
Tell us a little bit about sketching. What does it actually entail?
Well, urban sketching is a little more specific than sketching, but we consider it sort of a on-location, very truthful to our surroundings. And we try to sort of tell a story.
So when you're sitting there with a group of other folks, are you all sketching the same view? Or is everybody kind of taking their own particular perspective?
No, it does not have to be the same thing. Whatever you're interested in. Some people focus on the architecture or the people walking around in the marketplace. It can really be absolutely anything. There are no restrictions.
Now, you mentioned urban sketching is different than just sketching. What exactly is the difference?
Well, it entails a little more being truthful to the environment. It's sort of a record of time and place. We want to really capture that scene.
So you're sitting and you're looking at something in front of you.
Exactly. So to give an example, I could take out my sketchbook and just walk down the street, pick a street corner, and then sketch something that sort of I feel needs to be communicated or something that interests me.
So when you were traveling, you found that there was a community of artists who had found a love for sketching, and they would get together and they would sketch together and share each other's work and kind of take a look and gain inspiration from one another. Is that what you wanted to create here on Oahu?
Exactly, yeah. About a year ago, I started following Urban Sketchers, the international organization, online, and I thought they sort of took sketching to the next level. I mean, I took art classes before, and have you sketch sort of as homework, and they sort of, yeah, took it up a notch. And when I was in Lyon, France, they really inspired me. They had this great community going. And so I was surprised to find nothing here and thought I'd start that community.
Now, you said it's been about a year that you've had these events. About how many folks come?
Well, it's fluctuated a little. And bad weather has got us, although we consider ourselves very hardy and resilient. But, we're trying to spread the word.
Now, you have an upcoming event this weekend, and for those of us, or mainly just for me, who still draws stick figures, is this an event that anybody could come to?
Absolutely. Everyone's welcome, no matter your age, profession. We've had architects, people in the sciences, writers. No sort of experience level is needed. And no materials either. You can come in with a crayon. I've done that myself. A crayon and a loose piece of paper.
And so you'll find this community of other folks who are artists and maybe learn a bit from them. Is there any sort of educational process? If I showed up this weekend and said, all right, I've got my paper, I've got my crayon, and I've got some really rudimentary skills here, would somebody be able to help me out?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we start with sort of an hour of sketching, but we end it getting together in a group, sort of a show and tell, and we get to share a sort of technique and approach to the sketch, and therefore include that sort of educational aspect. And because we sort of bring in professionals and sort of enthusiasts, we definitely try to do that.
And so you mentioned no particular equipment is required. It could be something as simple as, you know, your sketchbook or a blank piece of paper and some kind of writing implement. It doesn't have to be fancy pencils or fancy brushes or anything like that.
Exactly.
Is abstract art welcome?
Well, we try to, be truthful. That's the part of urban sketching.
Because I might not be so good at sketching real things.
That doesn't matter. We all need a practice. I can't do perfect perspective either. So that's something. We sort of a skill we build. But we try to be truthful. Whether that's exactly picture perfect, that doesn't matter.
Well, that's good because I have a feeling I would be in your early level enthusiast, but nowhere near any kind of history of sketching. Now,
well,
you've
absolutely
actually...
Same here.
somehow, I don't think so. You've had a long-standing interest in art, and you've taken some formal classes at various places here in the islands. Where have you gotten the training?
Well, mainly at Honolulu Museum of Art School, just down the road in Manoa, or downtown Honolulu. Yeah, I've taken quite a few classes in painting, drawing, as well as ceramics and sculpture, and I really enjoyed all of them.
So there's some local artistic endeavors that are available, even here on Oahu at the Honolulu Museum of Art. You've also spent some time at the School of Arts in Chicago, and you're currently a student, is that right?
Correct, yeah. At UH Manoa, I'm a student, yeah.
And what are you studying?
Well, somewhat undecided. My interests do fall in sort of environmental sciences, but I'm sort of pursuing art on the side.
Well, and I could definitely see how you could combine those two. When we talk about doing sketches of sort of a realistic portrait of what's in front of you, that might change as time goes on with the changes in the environment. So we need folks like you.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so this event is coming up this weekend. Tell me where and when.
That's October 3rd, so it's this Saturday, actually. And we'll be at Art on the Zoo Fence. We're not part of that organization, but we'll be there to sketch it. That's at Kapiolani Park.
So
that'll be sort of 2 hours from 10 to 12.
So if we see a bunch of folks there with sketchbooks...
Exactly. We'll have a little sign set up and hopefully a bunch of sketchbooks there.
All right.
As well as sketches.
Fantastic. I might just see you there. I'll be in your very early early group of people who need some help. All right. Thanks for joining us today, Sebastian.
Thank you, Kathy.
Sebastian Siebert is the co-founder of the Oahu chapter of Urban Sketchers. They will be meeting up this weekend and welcoming everybody, first-timers, amateurs, professionals, adults, kids. If you want to sketch or you want to learn more about the events, head to our website at hpr2.org for more information and links to their upcoming events. Ding, 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 ding.
Ferdinand and the Bull has been many things to many people since the children's book was published in 1936.
The Disney animators took Ferdinand and really feminized the character. He was rounder, he had bigger eyes, longer eyelashes. A lot of people saw Ferdinand as gay.
I'm Sarah McConnell. Join me for With Good Reason, tonight at 6:30 on Hawaii Public Radio.
I'm Betty White, head of school at Sacred Hearts Academy. We have been an underwriter of Hawaii Public Radio for several years. We always ask people where they hear about Sacred Hearts. A lot of our parents are riding long distances in cars. Our teachers are quite involved in some of the programming, and I personally find it very rewarding.
Hawaii Public Radio, celebrating partnership, building community.
Kathy Kozak, you've been joining us this week and next to fill in for the arts interview segment of the program, and I think people know that you're a physician, probably.
Well, and they should know that I'm not much of an artist, but I definitely admire those who are.
That's not at all what I was going to say. I was going to say that you yourself have an arts background as a violinist. Yeah.
Well, music I can do, but draw something out in the community. Oh, Sebastian, you've got your work cut out for you.
There are artists and there are artists, Kathy.
I'm more of the abstract stick figure kind of type.
But with music, you remain active, don't you?
I do. And I think music really does enrich everyone's life. Whether you play or listen or be a part of it, it's all good.
You won't get an argument out of me. And that's the show for today. On tomorrow's agenda, Darlene De La Cruz shares local Catholic reaction to the Pope's visit. And since we heard from Mayor Arakawa on the Maui homeless issue, we'll also hear from Maui City Council's Stacy Carvalho.
Plus, want to take a walk around Chinatown with a professional photographer and see through their eyes? The International Kelby Photo Walk will talk with Nelson Bustamante and how yoga can help everyone have a more flexible day. We'll have Ray Madigan on how to incorporate yoga into an everyday practice.
We'd like to hear from you. You can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org, or you can post comments on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation.
If you missed any of this show or want to pass one, find them on the HPR2 archive. Just look under Talk Shows for the Conversation. I'm Kathy Kozak.
And I'm Chris Vandergrift. Meet us in the morning for more of The Conversation.